sono via.
This just sounds loud. Do I need to lower it? All right. So we begin lesson 13 this morning, and this is our last lesson in this series from Exhortations in God's Word. And it's been a great study for me personally. I will tell you that. I've appreciated this study. I appreciated all the participants and all the comments and things. And we're going to go today, and then we'll wrap up on Wednesday night. We begin this morning, and I'm going to tell you right now, this is kind of a unique way to wrap up a whole series of lessons. I think there's a lot of lessons that could still be drawn from this series. And so in some ways I feel that it's unfortunate and that we need to give it more time, but we have what we have. But we begin this morning, and I want to go back to Matthew, the 11th chapter. And when we started this series, this is, I think, one of the very first scriptures we began with. Matthew, the 11th chapter, verse 28, Jesus said, "Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." That was the plea that Christ had for mankind, is that we would come to Him. We would come to know Him. And as a result, if we seek Him out, then He would give rest to those individuals. Before He ascended, in Matthew the 28th chapter, one of the other verses we started this whole series off with, Matthew 28 and verse 19, we have what we often call the Great Commission, where Jesus says, "Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations." And when we went through this, we emphasized the fact that it says all the nations, all races, all languages, all social statuses, all economic statuses. It's all people means all people. And it doesn't matter where in the world we are. It doesn't matter what belief system that we grew up with. When He says, all nations, go and make disciples of all the nations, He's saying, go out and find these people. Make disciples of these individuals. Teach them, bring them, persuade them. He calls all people, all nations, to lay aside all ideologies, all other belief systems, all other religious ideas, and simply, "Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest." And so, we start this morning with 2 Corinthians 9, verse 6. Where we read, "Now this I say, he who sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and he who sows bountifully will also reap bountifully." This is the perspective that we have to have in mind as we work to fulfill that charge that Christ gave in Matthew the 28th chapter, "Go into all the world and make disciples of all nations." Is if we want all nations, we're going to have to work hard for it. We're going to have to sow bountifully. That's a hard word to say, by the way, especially from the South. But we need to have this idea in mind of Matthew 28:19, of this is a charge for us to keep. And when we talk about a charge, when we use that term, and I think we've shared this as well, a charge in a military context is going forward. It is a rush forward. It is a command that generates forward motion, if you will. And that is what we have here. We are told, go make disciples of all the nations. And the only way we can do that is if we come to 2 Corinthians 9 and realize that we have to sow bountifully. We have to put the seed out there as far and as wide as we can possibly put it out there each and every day of our life. So as we come into this, we started off saying we need to be holy. We have to walk by faith. We have to consider ourselves not to boast. We start with preparing our minds and beware of false teachers and not loving the world and fleeing the lust, bridling the tongue, and then keep seeking the things above. And I went back through that instead of just putting everything on the screen, because as much as we want to sow bountifully, and that's easy to kind of throw out there, this is how we start, is by preparing ourselves to be the example for the world that's around us. Preparing our minds, preparing our tongue, and holding it fast so that we say the things that we should say and don't say the things that we shouldn't say. That we are fleeing the lust, that we're not loving the world. And in so doing, we set the example of what it looks like to seek the things above, that we remember that separation, that we be imitators of Christ. So let's go to Matthew, the 13th chapter. A lot of times we read this passage just straight on through Matthew 13, 19 through 23, but I want to read it a little differently. So we've got four pictures up on the screen. We've got the path, we've got the stony ground, we've got the thorny ground, and we've got the good soil. Now, what Jesus does here, if you've read this, and all of us I'm sure have, is he does this parable of the sower, and then there's a little bit of a gap in time, and then he comes back to his disciples and he explains it to them. And in that explanation, when you put these three passages up against each other and you see what he says, here's what the explanation also looks like. And I'm going to begin with Mark 4:14, where Jesus says that the sower sows the word. And then Luke 8, verse 11, Jesus says, now the parable is this, the seed is the word of God. So we know that in this analogy, in this parable, the sower is the one putting it out there. The seed is the word of God. Now, let's look at Matthew, what's going to be up here is the Matthew 13 version. In verse 3, Jesus said, and he spoke many things to them in parables, saying, behold, the sower went out to sow, and as he sowed, some seeds fell beside the road, and the birds came and ate them up. Others fell on the rocky places, where they did not have much soil, and immediately they sprang up, because they had no depth of soil. But when the sun had risen, they were scorched, and because they had no root, they withered away. Others fell, meaning other seed, fell among the thorns, and the thorns came up and choked them out. And others fell on the good soil and yielded a crop, some 100-fold, some 60, and some 30. He who has ears, let him hear. And that's the way we tend to read it. But he talks about four different locations for this seed. So let's talk about the path for a moment. When we put these three verses, these three different gospel versions up here, here's what we notice when Jesus breaks it apart for his disciples. In verse 19 of the Matthew account, he says, when anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away. You know, we talk about Jesus coming back as a thief in the night, not knowing the time and the date. Well, how do you think Satan's going to treat us when he realizes that we're trying to obey God? He's going to come and snatch it away. The Mark account says, immediately Satan comes and takes away the word. Luke actually gives the reason, so that they will not believe and be saved. That's for the seed that just falls on the path. It's just laying there on the path. Let's talk about the stony ground. In the Matthew account, the people that receive the seed who are the stony ground, they immediately receive it with joy. All three accounts say that. But notice what all three also say. There is no firm root in themselves. And when affliction or persecution arises because of the word, immediately he falls away. Notice what Luke's account says. In times of temptation. So when we sometimes talk about persecution, we think, well, okay, someone hurts us physically. That is also temptation, because that's when it's easy to give in. I can just shove this aside and, okay, now I'm good. But in times of persecution, in times of temptation, are we going to hold fast and be rooted, or are we going to have no root at all, or almost no root? It says no firm root. One of the things I did 5 years ago when we bought this house is I stripped out all the mulch, all the stuff around the bushes out front. And before I put anything back, I put 5mm black plastic all the way down. I cut it around all the bushes, and then I mulched on top of that. And so now, 5 years later, when I need to go pull a weed out from the mulch, I literally take two fingers and pull it right out, because it has no firm root. It can't penetrate that black plastic, that barrier. Those who are on the stony ground have no firm root. They can be just plucked out with two fingers. Time of temptation, time of persecution, they immediately fall away. They get thrown away. Others fell among the thorns, and the thorns came up and choked them. Well, Matthew says that the worry of the world and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. Mark says the worries of the world and the deceitfulness of riches and the desire for other things enter in and choke the word. Luke says they are choked with worries and riches and pleasures of this life and bring no fruit to maturity. So, might obey a little bit, might have a little bit of root to them, but you know, when all the pleasures of this world come along, when the kids' ball games interfere with services, when you just don't feel like coming to services on Sunday mornings, whether it's Bible class or worship service, when your job calls you in and that's where you want to be, you want to make that money and instead of growing spiritually, that's what we're talking about here. The desire for the world and the riches and the pleasures, they supersede everything else. It's the priority. And this is what I think one writer called a prime example of a shallow faith. A shallow faith. And I think that would be the worry that I would have for the people that come in to the church is, where do they fall? Are they the path? Are they the stony ground? Are they the thorny ground? That's the path that we need to make sure that, that's the conversation we need to make sure we have. Where's our faith? Is it shallow? Or is it deeply rooted? And the only way you get to that deeply rooted stage, and we'll talk more about this, is through time, study, dedication, support from our brothers and sisters. Anything before we look at the good ground, the good soil. And others fell on the good soil and yielded a crop, some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. So he who has ears, let him hear. There's not much difference between the Matthew and Mark account, but look at the Luke account. The seed in the good soil, these are the ones who have heard the word in an honest and good heart and hold it fast. And they bear fruit with perseverance. You know, I remember as a little boy, came home from McNeil one day, had this bucket, and it had, I don't know, it was red handle. I think that's why I liked it. It was a white bucket, red handle, and we put dirt in it. And I put an apple seed in it. And I remember trying to grow an apple tree in my parents' kitchen. And I remember wondering, where's the apple tree? Because I was impatient. I was a child. I didn't understand that. It takes time. It takes perseverance. It takes nutrients and care to get to where we will see fruit being borne out. So each of us must be sowers. And we accept that responsibility when we become Christians. You know, I think I've told you all that as Jenna's getting older, we're having some more and more conversations. And this is one of those conversations I want her to have before she is baptized. Because I want her to understand, and I think we all should, that it's more than just being dunked in a body of water. Baptism comes with responsibilities. And this is one of them, is to become a sower of the seed. As we said, we've been charged with that responsibility by none other than Jesus. And we hold fast to this mission because Christians should have good and honest hearts. John 14:15, a verse we all know very well, says, "If you love me, you will keep my commandments." Well, we know and love the truth. Sowers of the seed know and love the truth. And they obey God out of humility and love and not compliance. That's another lesson I want my children to learn before they are baptized. And they are learning that. Because when we get to this stage, are we merely coming here out of compliance, or are we coming here out of love and out of care and desire? Galatians 6:1-10 says, "Brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if anyone thinks himself to be something that when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one examine his own work, and then he will have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. For each one shall bear his own load. Let him who is taught the word share in all good things with him who teaches. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption. But he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. And let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith. I point this out to us so that we're going to look at and reference this verse a few times here in the next few minutes. Verse 8, for he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption, but he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. So we must reap, we must sow to the Spirit as Christians. We have that responsibility if we are going to be sowers. We must sow by doing good for all men. What's the ultimate good that we can do for someone? That's a toss-up question. What's the ultimate good we can do for someone? Convince them, teach them, show them. You want to do good for someone? Live by example. Invite them here. Sit down and study with them. And we must sow with humility and gentleness. We talk about not growing weary while doing good. It can be frustrating. But it means that we are putting, the reason we would grow weary while doing good is because we are doing it with a good heart. We're doing it with humility and gentleness and love and compassion and desire to see other people obey the gospel. That's why we would grow weary, because we're trying to do all these things with the right intent. And we realize we're not going to convince everybody. And it can get frustrating and tiresome. And so we cannot lose heart. And heart is where we're supposed to go from. That's what we're supposed to use, because when we're appealing to somebody, we're appealing to who they are. It's that people-to-people connection. It's that interpersonal connection. We don't win someone over with a sledgehammer. We win someone over with love and the truth. Let's look at Luke 10 for a minute. This is not in your folder, but I thought it interesting here. This is another parable that Jesus shared. In Luke 10, verses 30 through 36, this is, and we won't read all of this or anything like that, but I do want to point something out with this, that this is the well-known Good Samaritan parable. You know, the one where the man is beaten, robbed, stripped, left for dead on the side of the road. Along comes a priest, and the priest passes by on the other side. Along comes a Levite, passes by on the other side. And then along comes his quote-unquote enemy, if you will. Someone who is opposed to him in so many ways, for so many reasons. And yet, verse 33, but a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. And we talk about this, we use this parable a lot of times to say, okay, are we going to be the good Samaritan? And that's good, that's great, but for a minute, I don't want you to put yourself in the shoes of the priest, the Levite, or the Good Samaritan, I want you to put yourself in the shoes of that man who was robbed and beaten and stripped. And he's laying there, and you're laying there on the ground, and you see people passing by. And then all of a sudden, somebody comes and lends you a hand. Are you going to turn them away? If they're the wrong skin color, or they don't look good? If we're the person laying on the ground, then we're looking for someone to show us love and kindness and help. We're looking for someone to help pick us up and set us back on our feet and get us back on the road that we need to be on. So I point this out to us because it's really easy to say, well, I'll be the Good Samaritan. Well, then understand, this is what the beggar, or this is what the hurt man is looking for, is someone to show compassion, someone to show them the right things. And I think we need to put ourselves in that other person's position. Because I know I take, for many years, I took being a Christian for granted. Because I grew up in the church. How many of you grew up in the church? Raise your hand. Yeah. There is something about growing up in the church versus the individuals who didn't. And I think, I will speak for me. I've shared just a second ago. Growing up in the church, it's easy to take being a Christian for granted. If we're out there sowing the seed and doing it the way that we should, then we don't take it for granted, and we realize that we're going to have to work extra hard to convince other people to obey the word, to read the truth for what it says, for what it is, and to help them, comfort them, nourish them with the word. Plant that seed in a good heart. So, Christians should sow to the Spirit. We've said that. It means that Christians must avoid sowing to the corruptible flesh. Galatians 6, verse 1 through 10, we read in verse 8, "For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption. But he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life." We get the choice. You know, I've got some bare places in my yard here and there. If I go out and I choose to get a bunch of weeds and I just... So if I sow weeds and junk, what am I going to get? Weeds and junk. But if I go and I get the really good seed I bypass all the box stores and I go to the where the farmers even go and I get that good seed from them, get that good fertilizer, and I put that out there, what am I going to get? I'm going to get a good yield. Hopefully, if I take care of it, if I water it and everything, which I'm not very good at. But we get to choose what we sow to. Are we sowing to the flesh? Are we sowing to the junk and the corruption? Or are we sowing to the Spirit? Something that is going to bear good fruit. That will yield everlasting life. So, we are to love and serve God, not the world that we live in. 1 John 2, verse 15 through 17, "Do not love the world nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world. The world is passing away and also its lust. But the one who does the will of God lives forever. We have this juxtaposition of passing away, living forever, eternity. You have life, you have death. If we love the world and the things in the world, we get death. If we love God, we get to live forever with Him. And that comes with preparing our mind, like we said. Beware of false teachers, not loving the world, fleeing the lust, seeking the things above. Romans 6, verses 12 and 13. Therefore, this is a passage we've used several times in this whole series. Therefore, do not let sin reign in your mortal body so that you obey its lust. And do not go on presenting the members of your body to sin as instruments of unrighteousness, but present yourselves to God as those alive from the dead and your members as instruments of righteousness to God. When we walk by the Spirit, we are sowing to the Spirit. When we are obeying Jesus, we are led by the Spirit, we are walking by faith, we are bearing fruit of the Spirit. If we will present ourselves to God as those alive from the dead. Now, another lengthy passage. Look at Galatians 5, 16 through 25. We're told, walk by the Spirit, and you will not carry out the desire of the flesh. Notice what down in verse 22 through 25. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. Now, those who belong to Christ Jesus have crucified the flesh with its passions and desires. If we live by the Spirit, let us also walk by the Spirit. So if we're going to be Christians, if we are going to sow to the Spirit and walk by the Spirit, this is what we must do. Because the flesh, verse 17, sets its desire against the Spirit. Notice what also 17b says, for these are in opposition to one another, so that you may not do the things that you please. The things that we please, talking about the things of the world, the things that would entice us and tempt us, they are in opposition to walking by the Spirit and the will of God. So, once again, if we're going to walk by the Spirit, we're going to sow to the Spirit, we're going to obey Jesus, we're going to be led by the Spirit, we're going to walk by faith, and we're going to bear fruit. And we're going to do it with gentleness and joy and peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. When we began this study 2 months ago, 3 months ago, this was the very first slide that we had up. And I want us to focus right on that little seedling. For a moment. A lot of times with parables and analogies and metaphors, we focus on the end result. Well, let's focus on kind of the beginning. How did we get to this? This little bitty seedling. We get to the seedling by working to bring others to Christ. Someone taught us along the way, So how do we get someone else to do it? Well, that means we have to go out. We have to teach. We have to offer and sometimes initiate the conversation with others. We get to a seedling by working to live by example. Matthew, the 20th chapter, going back to this. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you. We get to the end here with the tree, hopefully, but it starts with teaching. It starts with teaching. First Corinthians 9, verses 19 through 23. For though I am free from all men, I have made myself a slave to all, so that I may win more. To the Jews I became as a Jew, so that I might win Jews. To those who are under the law, as under the law, though not being myself under the law, so that I might win those who are under the law. To those who are without the law, as without law, though not being without the law of God, but under the law of Christ, so that I might win those who are without law. To the weak I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all men, so that I might, or that I may by all means have some, save some. I do all things for the sake of the gospel, so that I may become a fellow partaker of it. We get down on people's levels a little bit, and we talk to them, and we teach them, and we sow that seed in them, and we help them see that there is something different in us. And hopefully we pique their curiosity a bit, and they go, well, I want to see what's different about you. I want to know what's different. Sherry.
Let's take it the other way.
Okay. Okay.
They started to disease that tree, and eventually those limbs are going to start to die. And when that dies, you're going to cut off that limb. Well, if members of the church start keying on other members of the church, you're going to see the same thing happen.
Yeah.
Because eventually you have killed that tree, unless you call very deep pest control and they spray it real hard and they spray it good. And then that tree will start to thrive again, and little bitty leaves will start coming out. So when you talk about these things, it's just not for the people outside of the church.
I agree. As well, yeah. Yep, I agree. Totally. In Matthew, the 13th chapter, Jesus says, and he spoke many things to them in parables, saying, behold the sower. We're back to this, okay? So, look at where the sower goes out to sow. But then I want you to look at not... We've kind of spent this lesson looking at what he sowed. Now I want us to look at where he sowed for a minute. Some seeds fell beside the road, the path. Some fell on the rocky places. Some fell among the thorns. And some fell on the good soil. The reason I bring this up to you is because we have to overseed. And that's what the sower was doing. He was tossing that seed out. He was not testing the soil and sampling the soil. He was sowing the seed. He was putting it out there, and if it lands and sticks and grows, then there you go. But his job was not to go along the way and go, well, this is worthy of my time and the seed, and this is not. As Christians, we have to overseed. I never honestly, I knew we did crop dusting. I never thought we'd do aerial seeding, but that is a genuine thing. Think about that. Plane flying over a field and it's seeding a field. Hopefully it's a big field. But that's how we must operate. We have to operate and overseed using our example, using the truth, using the things that we say and do on a daily basis. And that's where we pick up on Wednesday night. Thank you all.